Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kezzor's production. In this episode, I get the opportunity to chat with the incredible Jill Saltzman. Jill is a brainstormer, sassy speaker, founder of The Founding Moms, and host of the Why Are We Shouting podcast. I have to say, this was such a fun conversation. Jill inspires by doing, and I'm here for all of her stories. Seriously, though, she is awesome. Be sure to check her out at foundingmoms.com. Here's a conversation with Jill Saltzman. This episode exists because of CatSource. CatSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CatSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com. You guys were talking about like corporate speak. I don't know if it was corporate speak. You had a word for it. It's like you're a person, not like you're writing a presentation to just a bunch of boring people. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
It's hard though, I think. And we're just going to keep going from here and just talk. This is what I like to do. It's hard for people because it's like a child. Like you develop these habits of talking a certain way. And if you've been in the corporate world, or you come up and you read what other people are putting out there, you just kind of like, well, that's the way I have to do it. So I'm just going to follow along. And then next thing you know, you're just doing it because that's the habit. And then it's like, it just gets super dull.
Horrible. I mean, we used to make fun. We'd have guests on the show and they would use big, fat business jargon words.
Yeah.
You kind of, I don't know. I feel like the listeners just checked out. Yeah. I checked out. Brad, who was my co-host, and I would stand there and roll our eyes, and then we'd quietly make fun of that person, sometimes on the air. It takes your authenticity right out of you. I don't know. I actually don't understand why people think in 2020 that that's thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I think social media is actually, when Twitter first came out, I was like, I like Twitter. You know, I'm getting into things and moving around.
Too.
And it taught me in a way to like write short, right? Just come up with words. Like you can't fit it all in there. And it just, I think social media gives you that opportunity to just say what you want to feel. The other thing is text messaging too. So if you text message, no one wants to read paragraphs. Just say what you got to say. And oh, wow, that actually worked.
I have to dump all of my friends who send me paragraphs because I do get those.
Yeah.
I got to get rid of them.
I still send them sometimes. I probably send my wife and she's very short with her like, and I'm like, I'm the sharer. And she's just like, one word, dude, like, that's all I needed. I didn't need.
That's hilarious. But to your point about like abbreviating and getting really good at that, every time we feature somebody online anywhere, any one of our members, I always ask for a bio or an about for their biz. And they always send me like seven paragraphs or three long monologues. And so I always go to Facebook because in the about section, you're forced to sort of write a concise little piece about your company. I just always go there. I don't even trust people anymore. I just go there and see what they wrote because it's always so much better than what they sent me.
They didn't have a choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Facebook, I guess. So,
yeah, there's definitely the good and the bad with all of it. Like too much of one thing is not necessarily a good thing. Yeah.
Right.
Have you always had this kind of energy? Because your energy, whether I watch you and your videos, or as we talk, or if I, any kind of content, I feel the energy and I feel more energized talking to someone like yourself. Cause I'll have podcast guests and everyone's different, right? Sometimes people can just, they can carry the conversation. They can dominate the conversation. Some people you got to like, come on, let's go. We're going to go on a little walk here. Work with me here. But you seem to just have it. Have you always had this?
Huh. Yeah. I really appreciate that. I've never heard that before. Yes. In fact, when we hang up, I will continue to have this much energy all day long. I don't drink coffee. I just have a ton of energy. I like being able to pour it into speaking. Yeah. Give me a microphone. Yeah. I'm fine. Yeah. And to do this with you completely energizes me. Yeah. I love the back and forth. I love people.
Yeah. You have these guts to go out there. And I heard the story you were talking about with, I'm going to get Eddie Vedder and we're going to get married. And I'm going to call up the Waldorf. Here's the thing. You pick up a phone. Is not easy. Like people take that for granted. Like it's not easy to just pick it up and be like, well, I'm going to have the nerve to call up this person and I'm going to say it.
Oh, and they just hung up on me. Oh, let's do it again and again. And then you're actually going to get through it and people can listen to your stories about this. But that takes some nerve to be able to do it. And it takes some energy, but it's also tough because I think you could have all this energy. And then once you kind of like get the no, you get hung up on, you kind of, what do they say? Get punched in the face. It's like, well, we're not going to do that again, but you just keep going. Like, it's inspiring.
That's hilarious because I'm thinking as you're explaining that, that I don't think it's inspiring at all. It's me being super naive. And truly, a lot of people, I think, especially in small business, have a lot of trouble with what you're talking about. Going ahead and doing the thing, talking themselves out of it. I never have been the kind of person to waste my time going, well, what if it doesn't work? It's just like, okay, I'm going to do it. And if I need to do the thing to get the goal, I'm just going to keep going. Yeah, it's like wired in me in a way where I don't understand the other side. I don't understand why people are like, I don't know if I should make the phone call, because why not? Like, well, the worst they could say is they'll hang up on you, and then who cares? But I think there's a part of me that's very naive and optimistic. And maybe that's where the energy comes from, where I just, well, who cares? Let's just keep trying. It'll work.
What happens when you walk into the Waldorf? Because you seem to be nervous before you were going to go. How old were you again in that? A teenager.
I think I was 16.
So then you finally, okay, come. And you're like, wait a second. No. That's not supposed to happen. But it does.
I mean, to get the thing is very different than the thing having been gotten.
Yeah.
I called the Waldorf and was like, I need to go meet my future husband. Like, there's a question. I'm going to keep going and finding Eddie better. But then when they say, okay, sure, we recognize you as a media person. By the way, I was also lying through my teeth. Right. And they thought I was like an adult editor of a magazine. So I think there's partly, oh my God, I'll be caught in the lie.
Sure.
There's partly, holy moly, I'm only 16. They don't know that I'm underage. So there was a lot more to it. And then, I had to play a role and pretend that I was an editor and meet Eddie, but I did never meet him, but it doesn't matter.
Well, then you do the thing with Paul Rudd, who I love, and you're like, just unbelievable. I mean, 40-year-old virgin, Anchorman. He's got these parts in these movies and he's just the best. And that is, I had no idea, right? He's a DJ at a bar mitzvah. Was that what it was?
Dude, I did not know either. Yeah. He DJed my then boyfriend's bar mitzvah. Yeah. And when he was on the show where we happened to be in the audience and started talking about his days as a DJ, it's pretty hilarious. Yeah. And I don't have the phone to show you right now, but we have photos of him like twisting balloon animals and being crazy on a dance floor. Yeah, he just had a life before he was an actor.
Yeah.
So that again was, oh my goodness, I want to make contact with him. Let him know that I'm in the room and I'm with somebody whose bar mitzvah he DJed. I don't think I think through to like, and then if it does work, here's what's going to happen. Yeah. I don't go that far. Yeah. Let's do it.
Was he a good DJ? I mean, the party you were at, that was your boyfriend's, right?
Yeah, that was my boyfriend's bar mitzvah, not mine.
Yeah.
I guess he was good. Yeah. I mean, what 13 years going to be like, that sucks. Yeah, he was, I guess.
Future movie star, right? Like, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And he did a lot, apparently. He was at a lot of parties. Yeah.
Obviously, he had that mentality too. He's like, I'm just going to go and show up and whatever I got to do, you know,
and he's hilarious. Right. So he probably had a ton of fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And well, it takes that nerve to just hand that piece of paper you had said to the runner. And then to realize, well, if I do this, if I do put myself out there, someone might like call us up on stage or things might happen.
Yeah. In fact, when I wrote the letter to hand to the runner to give to Paul Rudd, I think at the time I was pretty angry at my boyfriend for not telling me that he knew Paul Rudd. I think at the time when I handed it to the runner, I was 100% sure there was no way Paul would ever pay attention to this, but the handing over of the note would be a story.
Yeah.
Because I like it. You like a good story. So I think I went that far to be like, oh, I want to leave here. I'm going to tell him that I wrote a note to Paul. I didn't think it would work.
So well, here's what happens. I think a lot of times if you pick up the phone, a lot of people worry about what bad thing could happen, but you also could be worried about people have a fear of success of what possibly could happen. So there's a lot of not staying in the present moment. We all think about like looking backwards. I made a mistake. I did this. That was bad. Or thinking about what's going to happen in the future. It seems to me like focus in on right now. You're not worried about, well, in that scenario, what's going to happen if I hand this letter and you're playing out all the different places that this thing could end up. You're just living in the moment. Is that accurate?
That's very Zen Buddhist to you say.
I mean, I try to do it myself. It's not easy.
I think there's something to that. I've never thought about this. I think there is something to that, because when I watch a lot of entrepreneurs I work with talk themselves out of things, it's never about the thing. It's never about the phone call or the writing the note. It's always this fear that I'm going to be a failure and people will laugh at me or people will judge me.
Yeah.
I think I'm, again, wired in a way where if you literally started laughing at me right now, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't carry with it some sort of shame or I am now a failure kind of person. You know? So that helps, I guess.
Yeah. I've heard people talk about like superpowers, like, well, maybe don't think about it that way. That's a big deal because people will think both ways, right? I've heard block all signals forwards and backwards. Like, wow, if you could do that, that's really great. And sometimes you can, but other times it's like, no. I'm thinking like, what's going to happen here? Or this is what just happened, or this is what took place a while ago. And it's very difficult. And I think it's hard for a lot of people to, maybe they want to be an entrepreneur. And like you said, and they're thinking about all the negatives that could possibly happen.
Yes. Everything, because being an entrepreneur in and of itself is a very high risk situation.
Yeah.
Anytime anything can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is a time and a place for thinking ahead and going, well, if I do this thing, if I drop $50,000, is it going to pay off? You know,
for sure. There's planning and strategy that goes into it. You can't just willy-nilly everything.
But I am not a huge fan. If the thing is not so risky in the long run,
right?
I don't like the planning. I'm not into it because too many possibilities are there. If I wrote the note, it could have been burned in my face. It could have been thrown out. It could have been handed to Paul Wright. A million different things can happen.
Sure.
And I don't like to guess that, oh, there's a much higher probability that this will happen. Because I keep having those experiences you're talking about. Wanting to meet Eddie Vedder, getting in to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Going and having interactions with Paul Rudd on television. I've had too many experiences where these crazy things are no longer crazy in my life. Because I just keep doing them. And I think now I think pretty quickly, oh, wait. I'm going to try the zaniest thing because it's so zany. Nobody else has tried it before.
Yeah.
So it might just work.
You're willing to put yourself out there with that. And then you're willing to help others travel through that. The founding moms. I love it.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
I've watched my wife. Like I said, we have three kids.
Yeah.
And you are a lot of times, it's like no one taught you or told you what to do at 2 a.m. when your kid wakes up. You're like, now what? Like I remember when we got home and you had said this, like you didn't get the manual. They finally sent us home with our first, it's our son. We go home and we look around. We're like, well, now what do we do? Like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And your parents can tell you this or they can tell you that. And you did go to some classes, but you just throw that all out the window. And then you watch your wife go handle this and she's the driving force behind it. And she's just amazing. And how she pulled it all together. Like, I was in charge at the time. It wouldn't have been good. Like, we needed my wife to like take care of it. And like, here's what we're going to do. But there's so much to navigate through. You kind of just go with it. And that's what you're doing at the Founding Mom. So it sounds like you're helping entrepreneurs, mom entrepreneurs, like see the light, figure this out. This is difficult. Yeah, this is a challenge like all the time. And it's an amazing community that you're building. And I see it. I see in the videos of them talking about you and the Founding Moms and while you're all there for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear more about it. Like, what are you experiencing just running this community organization?
It's been an amazing ride. And it's so refreshing to hear a dad recognize that because a lot of our members don't hear that from their other halves. I launched the whole thing by accident because I was probably in the way that you describe back in the day, 13 years ago. I have a 13-year-old now, but she was born. I did the same thing, came home, put her down on the big bed. And then I left the room to go do some things because I didn't click yet. Like, oh my God, I have to be around 24/7.
That's right.
So two babies in, I was running two different businesses at the same time, which sounds nuts. But I really truly thought, how does anybody do this? I'm going to lose my mind. There's no manual. What's going to happen? So I started one little meetup. And I, at that time, this was 2010, I had no idea so many women had the same questions. And of course, now in hindsight, it's like, of course they do. But there was no support for women in business. There's always support for moms. There are a lot of mommy groups that can support both. But there was no combo of, can I show with spit up all over my sweats and can we talk biz?
Yeah.
Didn't happen. So I so love the community that I've built, but I haven't built it. It's been very organic. So we've all built this. We all need the practical education of how do you do better at marketing, sales, branding.
Sure.
But then there's this emotional component that real business people love to shy away from and not ever talk about, that they're affected by day, that the kids interrupting them. It's just, it's over the course of 10 years, I've also watched society become much more accepting, but
yeah,
it's an external struggle trying to do it, but it's also a huge internal struggle. So sure. We talk about all of it.
It's very vulnerable. And that's, you know, yeah. And that's hard. It's harder with certain people than it is with others to have that vulnerability and for people to share stuff. I mean, it's vulnerable just, hey, let's have a microphone and let's record it and let's get on video. And like all of a sudden you're like, well, people can now see me and they can judge me and they can say, that's terrible.
Yeah.
In many ways, we are being very vulnerable and you just have to be true to it to say, just say how you feel.
Yes.
But in relationships and whether it's coworkers or family members, it's not easy. It's not easy. And to have a community like this, because moms, children, things to do, businesses to run, you feel like maybe you're having to please so many people that you got to take it, and having people like yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how that also applies to everyone everywhere. We have masterminds. We call them founding exchanges. We have exchanges in Singapore, in Mexico, in Australia. It's the same everywhere. Everybody carries, every mom entrepreneur carries guilt, carries fear, has to be really vulnerable, doesn't want to, it's uncomfortable. But then she comes into a community like ours and sees that everybody's going like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And she's super relieved. Like, yeah. Oh, I don't either. But if you don't and you're still doing it, I can do that too.
Yeah. You see that a lot. When I was talking about my daughter before, and she did this Broadway collective, and it was this group, and they were going to go to New York City, and obviously they couldn't because of the pandemic. Then they were going to go to Raleigh, North Carolina, because that's where the founder is from. Well, they couldn't do that either because North Carolina. So it was all virtual, and they did an amazing job. And then they had Zoom calls with us, and we were on there, and parents were opening up. And of course, there's a lot of mothers on there. My wife was speaking about it, and I got to see her. She opened up in regards to everyone was doing it because, like you said before, it was this community. What do you hope to get out of it? What do you hope for your daughter? What do you think? And then it became about individuals themselves, and they were just sharing. Everyone was sharing. It was pretty amazing. And I think it was because of this community, and they had these commonalities with it, and they had these children that had these big aspirations to be on Broadway. And it was just, everyone felt comfortable doing it. And that seems to be what, in a way, you're doing. And I think that's where these communities, it's really hard to do it, but when everyone else around you sharing it, that's where these group, like, it wasn't therapy, but it almost felt like group therapy in a way. This, oh, yeah. For sure.
It's a group therapy of a sort where you can reveal all of your inner demons and dark secrets and move forward. And I don't want to make it sound like all we do is sit around and weep together and talk about our feelings all the time. But we focus mostly on business education. But what I find interesting is, even for the first 6 years of running the business, I never wanted to talk about feelings because I thought they didn't belong, because that's what I grew up thinking the business was. So every time somebody would want to share how she felt, I would shut it down. Let's just focus on that branding technique.
Yeah.
And I've drunk the Kool-Aid and I've come a long way because it is incredible to me how much people miss when they don't talk about these things. It's interesting. So our community makes it super safe to reveal that stuff within the context of, and I lost a sale today and it feels really crappy, or I don't really understand Twitter. Please explain it to me. It's just hard to admit that.
Yeah.
Make it easier for them to do.
Do you think with you and your content creation that helps you continue to dive into that more, to dive into your sharing of the stories that you have, to be more vulnerable because you're out there talking? Like, content creation, a lot of times it's like, well, let's grow the business. So if we create content, we'll grow the business more. I see there's like these side benefits. I mean, you and I having a conversation does not happen today if I don't have a podcast, if you are not interested in being on a podcast, and then we don't have these tools to connect to then schedule the podcast. But do you see those side benefits as well from content creation, forgetting the, oh, I got to grow my business stuff?
I do. And I'm pausing because I think there has been an evolution for me in the way that at the beginning, I was very inclined to only tell you about the business and what we can do for you and how awesome it is. Come join us. And then I realized every single time I was more vulnerable, we attracted more members or we got more attention. And so over the years, even though it still pains me sometimes, I've become more and more revealing about personal things, about stuff that makes it more interesting to talk to you, Eric. You know what I mean? Like, you know a lot more about me and who I am and how I do things. And so when I reveal that in content marketing, first of all, it makes it easier because you can tell a good story about something you experienced.
Right.
But I definitely like that it helps other people to see that and I can be an example for folks.
Yeah. I love that. Entrepreneurs, I found myself pushing people, say, oh, you should do this. You should be an entrepreneur. And then some people are entrepreneurial, but they don't want to maybe go all in and take the risk and say, I'm going to go invest, like you said, $50,000 or whatever that is, burn the boats.
Yeah.
And I've also seen that because there's people that maybe they just, that's not what they want. Do you find yourself like over convincing people that should be entrepreneurs, or is it more with the people they say they got it? I mean, because it's this tough thing where it's not for everybody and that's okay. Like it doesn't have to be for everybody.
Yeah. Actually, I'm interested to know how you feel about that. Do you walk around and tell folks it's so awesome and I have a podcast and I love creating it? Or it's like, is that?
I think earlier on, I would tell people, like even my wife, I would say, oh, you could do this or you could do that. And some things are entrepreneurial for her and other things, maybe she doesn't want that.
Right.
And that's okay. And there's a lot of people out there, people that work with me at our group that they don't necessarily maybe want to be running their own business. Mm-hmm. They want for now. And that shift can happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not out here. It's like, oh, it's always up here. It's always perfect. Oh, it's all, no. It's like, no. You better be ready for it.
I was always there. I used to.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're making me reflect on like over the past decade.
Yes, right.
I was there and it was part of like, I just launched a biz. It's to help you. You should be an entrepreneur because then we'd have more members. I think thanks to planning, even though I don't love to do that.
Right.
We have figured out that we don't want you if you're not sure or if you don't think you're an entrepreneur. Our members are typically like they've already been running it for 2 to 10 years of their lives. We like to talk to people who are fully entrenched, know how hard this stuff is, are really trying to work out how to run the biz and raise the family.
Yeah.
So if I meet somebody who wants to leave corporate, we'll invite her in. We've had a number of those. I'll have a friend who says, I really want to launch this. I'll get pumped. Personally, I will get energized. You really need to do this. It's the most amazing thing. I love it so much. But I no longer have the expectation that it's for everybody because I had to learn the hard way that they're not all wired like me or you.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think it's the not convincing people when people are ready for it. Because we create a lot of content. Like I said, we're doing podcasts for people. I love seeing people start, go from like, well, maybe they're 0 to 5 miles per hour. And then they like take the next leap. And there's so many different paths and so many speeds you can go. That's a lot of fun for us. But I'm also realizing like early on, like you are trying to convince people. You're like, we can't convince the unconvincible. And that's okay. And when they're ready, you'll be there. So when there's this mom out there and she decides that she wants to do this or she has been doing it, she comes across your group, she's like, Jill and I need to chat.
But there is a nice thing about giving her permission to even have that thought. Because I think back in the day, especially before the web, there was, do we call it the web anymore? Is that a thing?
I don't know if we do, but we could do that today. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I'm dating
www.
The interwebs.
It's all lowercase. It's all lowercase though, right? Just like, have you heard that where people like capitalize it still? Yeah.
No, it is interwebs is what we'll call it. But yeah, for the interwebs,
right.
It was so hard to launch anything and start it and see that other people are doing it. That I think that's why we have a lot more members now than we did 10 years ago. It's just so much easier to see the thing and to go, oh, she's doing it too, which we all need permission to do this stuff, right?
Yeah. You do. And it's, you said before, storytelling and your TEDx talk, your podcast today.
Love
your TEDx talk. I love it.
Thank you.
And we'll put it in the show notes. People can listen, whatever. We call it show notes. Like that sounds like so official now, but it'll be below the podcast. You click on it, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
So it's not easy to tell a story. We have a guy, Mitch, who works here. And I always say, you'll love Mitch because, and I was like, why do people like Mitch? Well, he's nice. You can trust him, which is a word I know you use a lot. But you know what he is? He's just got good stories. You're like, well, just tell us another story, Mitch. And you just roll with it. And same thing with you, Jill. You have a way of telling stories. And that's what I think brings people in. And then you can teach whatever. There's a lesson at the back end of it or like it just resonates.
I love that because that's the only way to learn, I think. I loved school. I have multiple degrees. But that's how they've been doing it since the dawn of time.
Yeah,
it just solidifies the story in your mind and the lesson and I just love learning that way. So I like sort of teaching that way too.
I love it. You said multiple degrees, Brown University, lawyer, right? Like was that, I want to be an entrepreneur. And it's like back then you're like, well, that's unemployment, right?
Yeah. Like, hold on. It sounds funny when you say it in like a linear fashion.
Yeah.
But I went to college because you were supposed to go to college. So that was not, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And then grad school was, I thought it'd be interesting. My boyfriend at the time, the one who's DJ, Paul Rudd, he was like, I think I want to go to law school. I was like, oh, I'll go too. And it wasn't, again, me with the planning, not a thing. So it was not a plan. I think first year of law school, I loved it, by the way. I'm one of the few who loved it because there was never pressure on me to do super well and get into a huge firm.
Sure.
I think I knew I always wanted to work for myself, but it wasn't like I set out to be an entrepreneur. And I did work in corporate for a minute.
Yeah. But does it teach you, like when you went to law school, I mean, I would imagine your critical thinking and all these things are still playing itself out today.
Totally. Yeah. So grateful that I have that education that I wished it was sort of required for everybody. Because if you're ever going to buy a house and want to know how to read the contract, if you're ever going to hire a lawyer and work with them, any which way, they taught us an awful lot that's been really helpful. Trademarks, when I got to that point in my biz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot that I can understand in a very logical way now that law school taught me that I love.
When you start a business, they don't make it easy to start a business. So you need to know someone that could at least help you out. I remember I did the same thing with my business. It's like, I need someone who understands how to do all these little things with the Secretary of State and all. It's little things and it adds up and it just only gets more and more as you get more into your business.
It's really overwhelming. And not to say that anybody listening or watching should not go hire a lawyer. I firmly believe you should.
Right.
And I have had to multiple times because there's just too much law to understand. Yeah. But yeah, it provided a basis and perhaps made me more confident to go do certain things that I wouldn't otherwise have done.
Yeah. So you're not like running around, oh, I'm a lawyer and I went to Brown and I know everything, because you say the thing and you say it well, everyone's making it up, right? No one knows exactly what they're doing.
No. I don't like even talking about the degrees.
I know you don't.
I know exactly what I'm doing. No. I love that I got them, but
right.
Yeah. In fact, again, 10 years into my biz and every day I feel like we're a startup.
Yeah.
And we're just starting from scratch and we're trying new things and it's always trial and error. And I don't work at a huge corporation, so it's different, but any entrepreneur will tell, like if you hear that Bill Gates or Richard Branson knows everything about everything and they know what they're doing, I challenge you to call them and ask them.
Yeah. Yeah.
None of them do. You can't predict the future. You can't predict market shifts. It's just impossible.
No. Yeah. You can't predict the pandemic, right? You say Bill Gates, it's funny because inside Bill's brain, it's a Netflix documentary and it shows him going on his excursion. He does every year for 2 weeks. It's by himself, like in this little cabin, and he just reads books and drinks Coke or Diet Coke or something like that. And it's fascinating because like you're saying, like, no, they're constantly trying to learn and gain an edge. And his biggest fear was losing his mind, losing his knowledge, not being able to retain the things that he can retain. And, and he's an extreme example of someone like that, but you're so right. Like no one has it all figured out.
No. And I kind of secretly, I love that. I love that nobody is doing, because that also gives me more confidence to do the thing. Because how many experts have we all met who, it has to be done this way. And then you explore a different way and it totally works.
Yeah. And that doesn't sit well with entrepreneurs, I don't think, when they tell you the way to think. They'll tell you the way to do things. Because entrepreneur's mindset is, don't tell me what to do. Like, I want to go figure it out. Obviously, within reason. That's why you have an attorney. Like, no, the attorney said, okay, we should probably listen to that one, right? Yeah. But
well, to your point about being ready to hear it, I no longer also advise people unless they ask. Like, they have to be ready to hear it, take it in, and do something about it. Yep. And if you're going to be that kind of person, good luck to you. But I'm not going to force it on you.
Yeah. Getting people to be aware of the Founding Moms, of your podcast, to be on a podcast like this, you talk about, you tell everyone. And that's one of the basic ways to build a business. You talked about meetup.com and obviously social media brings this and just getting on other people's platforms. You just simplified it for everybody. Tell everyone what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Because not enough people do. It's like, show it off. This is not a moment to be humble. And I'm not walking around, by the way, saying, hi, I'm Jill of the Founding Moms. I don't, not every second of every day, but I think that people miss huge opportunities because they write off that, well, Eric is a guy. He wouldn't care about what I do for a living. Meanwhile, you're married to a mom entrepreneur.
Right.
Or whatever your situation. I didn't mean you specifically, but you're here with me.
Yeah, I get it.
I don't really comprehend why people keep quiet. And what's fascinating to me that you might not know, of course you don't, you're not in the Founding Moms. The majority of members, when presented with an opportunity to be in a PR something, in some big magazine that's looking for experts, in literally anything, do you want to be on a podcast, will shy away and not take up the free opportunity that's specifically meant for them. I don't understand what it is yet. I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
But there's something about exposing who you are and what business you run that's like too much for people to handle. Meanwhile, all they want are sales. So it's fascinating to me. I don't know. There's something in there.
Oh, it's psychological. I mean, it's not easy. And I think we're all, I mean, I'm guilty of it sometimes too. Like you don't feel right sharing it in that moment. I don't know what it is. You're right.
And we all have different reactions to different people. And if somebody reminds you of your mom, you're not going to tell them anything or that, whatever your baggage is. But to be able to say it more comfortably, more frequently to you, it helps your biz. It helps you get comfier and less scared of doing it more often.
Yeah. You never know. And there's something.
You really don't.
It's really serendipity, are. Right? Like you just have these chance encounters and these moments and you talk to this person and you could be talking to me and it's like, oh, wow, I have this person that you need to talk to.
Yes.
That's what's so cool, I think, about like a podcast because there's a voice to it and there's some rhythm to it. And then someone can hear it and say, wow, I really like what Jill's all about. I want to talk to her. Or maybe the other way, I don't like what she's all about, but guess what? Now we don't have to waste time talking anymore, right?
That too.
Yes.
Yep. Although, my favorite example of that is that the Founding Moms grew because meetup.com became a real partner for us and helped us tremendously. And I would not have gotten that partnership, access to it, the ability to talk to and get to know the founder, unless I had mentioned quietly for one moment to my dentist that I was working on meetup.com because my dentist's brother is the founder of Meetup. How on earth would we ever have gotten there if I didn't mention what I was working on? And not that we always have opportunities to mention it, but to your point of we never know where it's coming from, I, again, have had tons of experiences where you really just don't know who knows whom.
Yeah. That story is so important because I think the more someone hears it, it's not their story maybe, but they've heard it enough times to use it as their own narrative to say, I've seen this play out. I've heard of it playing out from real people, not like something in Hollywood. I get that, but something real. And you're like, I can use that as my own narrative. So I'm going to say it. And you don't know.
Yes. That permission thing is so important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. To remind myself of those stories. Cause then when I go out in the world, once we can go back out again. Yeah. Hi. You might know somebody who.
That's not easy for you then to not be out in the world. I mean, you got this at least, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. I mean, I've appreciated parts of it. I've loved the no travel. I've loved really getting to know the family members in a whole new way.
Yeah, yeah.
I miss people. I miss hugs. I miss this in person.
Yeah. Well, because you were talking about maybe planning a trip, a vacation for your family, because everyone's like, oh, the family, they're having so much fun in there. It's like, well, no, there's a lot of things that are going on. Like you just made that the way you said it was like, yeah, every day's interesting.
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting time for everybody. But
yeah,
I think everybody misses to some degree. I know the deep introverts don't agree and they love this.
Yeah.
But I actually think that the human connection thing is real and no one can live by themselves on an island for too long without going.
Yeah. So how quarantined are you right now? In Chicago?
Super quarantined. The kids are remote through the rest of the semester. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's been different here. Some people are much more comfortable than others starting to go back out, checking into school. I unfortunately got COVID in March. So I'm one of those like hyper worried people who doesn't want to get sick again.
Yes.
Like I don't even sit outside at restaurants. I just get the food and I go. So I've been very...
You wrote an article about that, right? Because we connected a while ago. You did. Okay. I hadn't seen it today or yesterday, but I remember when we had talked before, whenever that was, it's been a couple months at least. And I saw your article and I think it's on medium.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
You had COVID in March. That's right. Like you didn't have a great experience with it. Like,
it's weird. I feel terribly complaining about it because I was not hospitalized. I didn't die.
Yeah.
So I'm a luckier person, but I'm one of the long haulers. So I got sick in a way where I could sit at my computer every day and still work.
Okay.
But like exhausted beyond exhausted. a lot of lung pain. And it gets really scary when it's a brand new pandemic and you are having trouble breathing and you're telling your partner, like, my will is downstairs. There's a copy on the shelf. It got really scary for a minute. And my doctor would say, like, oh, don't bother going to the hospital. That's for like the really, really ill.
Yeah.
So it really was much more scary than it was painful. But the pain and the sickness was about a month long. And then I continue till this day to have lung issues. So stupidly, I haven't gotten it looked at. But
you still don't feel 100%.
I feel 100% right now while I'm talking to you. But if I do any exercise, when I go for a jog, I have to breathe twice as fast. So I think there's some scarring or something that's happened. But
yeah. Well, there's stuff coming out about lungs and heart and like, and no one knows. And that's like, you're kind of saying it's like this uncertainty. Do you know where you got, like where you got COVID?
Funny. Everybody asks that. But no, I mean, I could have 17 hypotheses.
Because in March, it was like, it wasn't really shut down.
I mean, I was one of the people right before COVID was announced, basically. I was that mom at my kids' school play, like sanitizing the entire row of people, and they all thought I was crazy. I was hip to this way early.
Yeah.
Still got it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where I got it. I think now, I didn't know I had an underlying condition, but I once got severe altitude sickness. So I think there's something, I had a proclivity for getting it a little earlier. And I did not know that I had it for the first week or two, so I didn't quarantine. So what's interesting is my entire family, I live in a house of six people, no one else got sick.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's great.
That is good. That was my last question. Like, it sounds like no one else in your family got it and they didn't. So that's...
And if they did, it was like extremely short-lived.
Yeah.
My partner had a fever for 2 days. My older daughter, she was really sick for a minute before I was. So maybe I got that from her.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know.
You don't know. And it's like, but
I don't want anybody to get it. Cause even if you have a light version of it,
right,
the long-term damage is crazy.
Yeah.
I've never experienced anything like this. It's not.
Yeah. But like, it's a story and you had it and you shared it and you told people about it. And that's important because it's better than reading it in the mainstream media. I'd rather read it, an account from someone like yourself and what you had to go through. Not that I would want you to have it, but you did and you shared.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. There was a point where I had to shut myself off from reading the mainstream news because it was just too scary to read while you're sick. Yeah. But yeah, hopefully we all have a really safe fall. And then I'm 100% sure, and I love this is on video, so we can prove this later.
Oh, yeah.
January 2021, the virus will be gone.
I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm signing up. I'm in. I was reading some more stuff, obviously, about you. And you have all these books. Do you like writing books?
I do.
You do.
What's funny, I love writing and I write a daily newsletter. Like every day, that's me. I don't have assistants helping me. But my books are kind of abbreviated versions or compilations of my emails.
So they're already there.
Yeah. So I'm reusing. What's that term we use in marketing?
Yeah. Repurpose.
Thank you.
Repurpose. That's it. I got it. Yes.
You got it. You knew it. See, it's the big business jargon. Don't
love it. That's right. Yeah.
No, my first one I wrote in 2012 in an effort to say, hey, look, I'm an author. Come hang out with us. That one, Founded, is what that one's called. It's just a field guide for mom entrepreneurs. And I wrote it so that you could read it in a bathroom. Like, it's just quick reading.
Yeah.
And then I came out with one, God, it's 2 years ago now. It's the best business book in the world, according to my mom, is the title.
Yeah.
That one is a compilation of the emails that folks seem to like the best that I've written. Yeah. It was lovely to put it together, but like wrote a good book.
The title is the best because it's like, I think about who our biggest fans are. It's my mom and my aunt. And it's like, my Aunt Shelley is just like, she's like, well, I'm the number one fan, right?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it's the best book in the business book. My mom thinks so. Yeah.
That's it.
And you would have thought with that title that it would be like a $1 million situation where it just fly off the shelves. But it didn't.
It still could. I mean,
it's still good. I love that.
There's so much there. And you have a daily newsletter. Your daughters have what is it, 3 days a week newsletter?
3 days a week. It's a little bit on hiatus during the fall. Okay.
I get it because there's school and kind of important. It's kind of a big deal, right?
The older daughter writes twice a week and the other one writes Wednesdays. And it's very cute. And I don't do any editing. I help put it in the template.
Yeah,
but I want it to be their style. And it's so cute to watch them, how they write.
who's reading their newsletter? Is it like their friends? Is it young people, moms?
I'm going to say that most of their family members are friends.
Family members. So. Okay.
And there are some strangers.
Well, we're not a stranger anymore. I'm going to get my youngest daughter, Chloe, and she's going to sign. She's got email. She's like, Dad, I got email. I want to check it out. Yeah.
I've had such a hard time with it in that I have promised myself when they were born, I would never put them on the internet until they were 18. So yeah. I've never put a picture of them. I don't let their names out anywhere. They are Miss Roses and Miss Sunshine always. Yeah. But they have so much inside them that they want to do and produce just like their mom. So yeah. I'm having a bit of like a...
It's hard.
Go out and do it. And
yeah,
because I want to protect them and their identity online.
It's tough. My youngest, she likes streaming. I mean, you're totally unexpected, but she's a riot. And it's like you just said, it's creating, it's producing something. So there's this fine line that you have of protecting them, but allowing them to try things.
And express themselves.
There's no manual for it. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right? Not for me either, but I cut loose and let them do this newsletter and there's no name or picture, but I have a feeling more things are coming and we might have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you have a lot? Because, okay, so you have multiple books, you got a podcast you did, you have another podcast, you got the Founding Moms.
Yeah.
Just a lot of things. You have ideas. You have people that you need to help and consult and talk to, and you have new ideas, I'm sure, that you're working on.
Yes.
Like, it's a lot. Like, I've been like trying to delete as much as I can, do what I can and do it right then, or just like, you know, I do delegate, delete, all that kind of stuff. But it's true. You have to figure a way out, because if not, it's just like, I don't know what to work on next, or you got to prioritize, obviously. But with your creativity and your ideas and your passion and energy, like, do you ever feel like, oh my goodness, this is a lot. I don't know where to go first. Or do you feel like you have it all?
Yeah.
Not all, but definitely. Like, okay.
I have a lot of days of super creativity and then I have to put it into action and I definitely get overwhelmed from time to time, or I'm just exhausted. And I'm like, what did I do? There's so much going on. But I've also figured out over the years how to systematize it and created a little team of virtual assistants who make a lot of it happen now, where I can just keep creating and I don't have to work on all the little things.
Yeah.
The world of VAs opened up to me about a year ago and I'm in heaven because so affordable and I can just do what I want to do. So yeah, I'm going to keep creating. We have a lot of things coming up.
That's good. Your VA world, where are you using like an Upwork or a different system or something direct?
Oh, I used this company a while ago. They were so great that we partnered with them. So if call it the virtual help program, anybody can go to it. If you go to foundingmoms.com/virtual help.
Okay.
Very brief. We call it an application, but it's like a 3-line form. You fill out what you're looking for and then you get sent options of somebody who's between $8 an hour and depends on what you need and like $20 an hour. But we like to hire folks who are living in war-torn countries who are highly educated and can't get a job.
Yeah.
So they're my favorites. And they're the only drawback is that, and I have VAs in many different countries. The only drawback is time zones.
Yeah.
But it's incredible how much I've been able to do and how much they do with me.
Yeah.
I can't live without them now and worry about their health.
Systematize it. It's a corporate word, but it's important. It's true. It like you have to have a system.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's a good word. You have to use it. Yeah.
Did you say it? But I created ways for me to be able to not be overwhelmed. That's what I did.
That's a good phrase.
Yeah.
That's a good tweet. Maybe. Yeah.
I like that you put things in tweets. Yeah.
Yes. So, all right. Where should we go to find more out about you? I mean, obviously, we're going to put it in the show notes, like we said, but where do we go to find out about Jill?
Because we also need a different phrase for show notes.
We do.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. Everybody can go to foundingmoms.com. That's it. It's not thefoundingmoms.com. It's just foundingmoms.com. You can find everything there. But if you go to jillsalzman.com/podcast, that's where my podcast lives, the Why Are We Shouting podcast. And I'm at Founding Mom everywhere.
Yeah. I love it. I love the combo. You said it the word before. We have a platform. It's called Sports Epreneur. It's a weird word and no one can say it, but it's like at the beginning, it was like sports and entrepreneurship and they collide. So much of it gets into mindset and mentality and lifestyle and all these different things. And I get to talk to these people and have these amazing conversations of like how they built this and how they deal with these struggles. And it's a lot of fun, but it was like, it's this combo where you take these two things together that you might not think necessarily go together and they do. And that's where it lives. It's like you said, there's so many of these other, and they're not bad. It's just, this is unique to you and what you're doing. So I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think you're awesome.
Yeah. This has been great. This has been one of my favorite conversations and just the energy. I feel better just even talking to you. Yes.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
The energy, I'm just sending you my energy. There you go.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to connect. And
yeah, me too. Thank goodness the interwebs. I appreciate
the interwebs. Yes.
Connected.
Yes. So January 2020, we'll have to make reservations. After that, we'll have to connect and meet like real people when we get to meet real people.
Totally. Would love that. Yeah. January 2021. You heard it here.
Yeah. I'm in. Thank you, Jill.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode exists because of CADSource. CADSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CADSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting CADSContent.com.